We'll now turn to Bill Resnick and John Schuck to talk about religion and progressive values.
Hi, John Schuck. I can't say welcome to KABU because you're always here.
That's right.
But I can say welcome to the old Mole Variety Hour.
Well, it is an honor to be here.
Well, thank you, John. John Schuck is a board op here at KABU Monday and Thursday early mornings. I see him recording and editing a lot as well. I knew he had a religious show here at KABU, but must admit I never heard it. It's on progressive religion. Last night I opened his website, and I was absolutely amazed. In the old 60s phrase, I was blown away by its depth and breadth and especially its implications. Radical critiques of the way this country is going, radical critiques of most establishment religion, although generous to some extent, it seems to me, radical critiques of establishment morality. And it seems to me you're really proposing a radically different morality as to values, as to practices, as to sexuality and work and authority, relations to one another, relations to nature. It's a glimpse for me of what had to be, because most of these people were affiliated with churches, and there are all kinds of stations that were running your interviews. And there are all these people organized in churches and practicing their religion on a daily basis. This is by far the biggest left in the United States that one could imagine, is my sense.
The religious left,
the religious left. Why not just be a political group, though, or a political party with this platform of support for the poor and good work for everybody, military disarmament, respect for nature and our fellow humans, police reform, reproductive rights, black lives are the most endangered and they matter, and also a sort of sense of participatory democracy versus hierarchical systems that we have in almost all institutions. Why not just be a political party advocating that rather than this dispersed religious movement?
Why bring religion into it, in a sense?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was first asked to do this show when I was in Tennessee, East Tennessee. That's where I lived before I lived here. And you can turn on the radio and you will find constant religious programming. And it's always very much connected with right-wing politics. And so I was asked actually by a college radio station because I had another blog, Schuck and Jive, in which I wrote a lot of this kind of stuff. And the general manager asked me to do a show about this because you wanted an alternative religious voice, because so much of the right-wing politics had the religious language connected to it. So it isn't necessarily just a response, but it's part that. I also happen to be connected with a religious tradition. I grew up in it, although it was fundamentalist. I've also found that within it, there is a strong critique of empire, of abuse, of violence, of all of these kinds of things that have often not been necessarily lifted up within religion, because usually people use religion to do bad things, frankly. I mean, we can think about that. But yeah, there's also a use of religion that can inspire sublime madness of the soul, as Reinhold Niebuhr would say. Chris Hedges quoted him when he was speaking here, and I thought that was great. You kind of need that sense of a religious spiritual identity, something bigger than yourself, whatever that might be, to carry the movement forward.
I guess also to do it together and to have it influence your life and to see yourself with others with these same beliefs. But there's also sort of sense of faith. People need meaning and purpose. They just don't need political goals or anger at authoritarians. They need to feel as part of something larger and yet creating it themselves with others.
Yes.
And singing it too, and dancing it, and celebrating life.
Absolutely.
You know, I go to too many left meetings where nobody's celebrating life. We may even end singing Solidarity Forever, although we often don't. I used to love to sing the International at the end of meetings.
Sure. And one of the things that communities have is that's one of the few places where you actually can sing together or do things together or talk about meaningful things. Even, for example, my friends who are atheists, I consider myself a Christian atheist, which is marvelously jarring. But my friends who say, you know, and then now there are all these atheist kind of churches. There's the need for the very thing that you're talking about. And so my thing is, well, I'm already in this institution. It's already got a lot of property. It's already got all the time. It's got history and tradition. Why hand it over to the most obnoxious of people? Let's reclaim it and find the value in it and use it to do good.
This is KABU Radio, and we have two KABU hosts on the air. I'm Bill Resnick for the Old Mole. I'm talking to John Schuck, who does the show Progressive Spirit. When are you on, John? It's not a time when I'm ever listening.
Progressive Spirit is a podcast. It's a weekly podcast. The show that is on, and that it's occasionally on KBOO, but there's a similar show called The Beloved Community. It's the second Friday at 9 a.m. So that's mostly local Portland, but it's the same issues.
But you're all over the country.
On the Progressive Spirit one, that's an hour-long show. It's on about 10 stations, mostly through Pacifica, some college stations, because it connects me with the things I need.
It must be very fulfilling for you. It also connects you with a lot of people.
Yeah, I always have material for sermons.
And you have terrific people to quote and to emulate and to kind of raise ideas in interesting ways.
Because there are a lot of people with a lot of things to say, and it's difficult within the media to talk about issues of social justice and spirituality or religion or whatever you want to call it, because most religious radio, as you know, is basically the right-wing fundamentalist stuff, and you don't get a lot of that on the other side, and so it's...
But there is a lot of it on the other side.
There's a movement that just isn't publicized often.
It's sort of hiding in plain sight, actually. People publish books, they have churches, they do sermons, they do conferences, and there's so many branches of it. It's decentralized. It's radically decentralized all over this country, right? Little churches. You're the head minister of a little church in what, Beaverton?
Southminster is the church. Southminster Presbyterian. That's the full-time job that pays.
That pays. When you do a wedding, though, you get an extra emolument.
You know, that's an amazing thing. I don't do very many weddings. People don't need ministers to do them anymore, which is a good thing. They go out and get married in the woods or whatever and have somebody who gets an online degree. And I think that's a wise thing to separate that from church. But that's a different issue altogether.
It's a wise thing. It's also good to have people who help develop the discourse. Sometimes you go to these homemade weddings, and the discourse is only, I love you, rather than we are together in this great, we're becoming a different kind of unit within this great struggle.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that there is a sense of loss of some quality of those. No,
it's good. I think it's a very good homemade everything.
Homemade is good.
Homemade everything is good, except for violence. Yes,
that's right.
There's some of that too. Well, and the worst kind of violence, all sorts of it, that gets centered in the happy home. But that's another matter that the church deals with, actually, it seems to me, in lots
of
ways.
I want to give one more question to that first question about why religion. And it happened because I was at the mosque, and it was Anila Afzila, I believe is her name, a Muslim woman. And what she was doing was talking about Islam from a feminist perspective. So you find people recovering the traditions that they have to use them in liberating ways today. That is a thing that's also happening. People are looking back to their old traditions and realizing, wait a second, this Muhammad was a really radical guy for his time, and Jesus or whoever. And so they're finding that again and finding, hey, wait a second, there's some parallels going on here. I can use this and connect with it that way.
Well, that's a question I wanted to ask you about, and it has to do with theism and monotheism and the creation of a god and then giving the god these human capacities to punish you or to reward you and to lead you, and then the sense that God gave you the commandments and we have to enforce those commandments, and those commandments are, some of them are okay, love your neighbor, some of them are quite terrible, and the right wing, of course, picks up the worst of it. Let's talk about, though, the kinds of, let's say, authority relations. I call them authority relations, but they're human relations. How people should live together, how decisions are made in families and in larger bodies. Religion is always, in many ways, the Pope, of course, is a central hierarch. His pronouncements from cathedra are infallible, of course. But most religion, in fact, have, and the people on top, of course, become bureaucrats who really want to run these things for what they see as universal purposes, which are often their own purposes, of course. The radical church, it seems to me, has to be organized differently and has to always struggle against the sort of hierarchy that a lot of people feel comfortable in. They often want to have somebody strong helping them through their difficulties. How do you deal with that?
Some have suggested that was part of Trump's appeal, this authoritarianism, and that people needed that. And so, and that's certainly true for religion, especially as it's reinforced. The Pope wasn't infallible until the 19th century. It was really a response to modern criticism that these doctrines came back in, that suddenly he is the guy. And that's what happened. That's biblical fundamentalism didn't start until the 19th century as a response to modern criticism of the Bible and evolutionary theory. And so we think Christian religion, it wasn't always this distorted, and especially it came back again, especially with the rise in the 80s with Reagan and the moral majority and all of that kind of stuff. So now the mainstream Christian religion in the United States is a fundamentalism. That wasn't the case, you know, earlier decades.
It seems to me it was way before the 19th century, though, that the consolidation of a hierarchy.
For example,
in the medieval period, there were heresies, radically democratic places where the church became part of a very democratic society of small artisans and all the rest of it, and caring for one another independent of central authority, whether king or church. And of course, in that period, those heresies like the Anabaptists, and there were many, many heresies where people got together to form really democratic societies, they were wiped out and tortured to death.
It's brutal.
The hierarchy of the church in the Inquisition, like in the Catholic Church, it was absolutely brutal and efficient of wiping out whole societies. So, I mean, it's a lengthier process, but
it is.
Of course, the Romans wiped out. Hierarchs always grow and kill democracy. I mean, real radical democracy.
Yeah, when the Roman Empire became the Holy Roman Empire, when the church was ultimately wedded with Constantine, that started a different path all along. And that's exactly right with the authoritarianism. And that's why the wonderful groups such as the monasteries and nuns were such a threat to often the authoritarian aspect of it.
Oh, right. They then would rebel in lots of ways. The church was always sort of, but they of course needed the labor of these people.
Yep. That's right.
So you had this, well, you did have slave labor. I mean, that's another facet of it, of course.
But your question, I think, is authority. And I think that spirituality or religion, what I try to teach people is that you have permission. You know, you already, and it isn't anybody, nobody grants it, that of freedom of thought and freedom to exercise your values and to read texts in ways that are liberating to you and not necessarily connected with an authoritative interpretation.
This is KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick here interviewing John Shuck, who does the show Progressive Spirit on KBOO, and he does a blog and he does interviews that are played by small stations all over the country, and they're available to all. He actually is building a large audience, not just in Portland. And John's a board op at KBOO. Why do you come in at 6 in the morning on Mondays and Thursdays?
Mondays and Thursdays, my volunteer work. And I'm actually on a board of KBOO, too.
Oh, you're on the board. I didn't know that. Well, there you go. Oh, John, you really do have two jobs.
You mentioned Christian atheism. I wanted to say a quick thing about that I think is very helpful. God or gods was something, that's how the world worked when you think of before in a modern science. Well, now modern science doesn't really... We don't need gods to do the work anymore. So that doesn't mean necessarily that religion's out of place, because religion always was, which God? Is it our God or this God? Is it the God of, let's say, Caesar, or the God of perhaps we might say Jesus or Muhammad, who, you know, was about social justice? So that was always the question. It wasn't necessarily where God exists. It's what kind of God. And now we don't need gods, but we still have that question of how we value and how we're going to structure society and how we're going to structure human values. And that's why Christian atheism, I think, is the modern way and way to go.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. I always thought sort of the radical position for the church was God is not some anthropomorphized sort of person, you know, who gives the laws and who's somehow and administers punishment and rewards for those who obey his commandments, which are often very restrictive and terrible, depending on who interprets them, of course, the human interpreter. Then there are some groups that say, well, but God is a spirit. God is an ethical sort of God is sort of the life force that binds us all together. I mean, that's sort of a middle position that I always thought that's all right, you mm-hmm. know. But a lot of your guests want to dispense with this whole idea that there is some set of ideals and values that come before human process and before humans. A lot of your guests seem to be saying, and so they see themselves as atheists, rather than agnostics even, but atheists that are, and it's a principled position. I see that your guys are, I mean, women too, mostly women, actually, it seems to me you've interviewed over the years, actually.
Well, Greta Vosper is the United Church of Canada minister who lost her position, viewed unsuitable. It's the most liberal denomination probably on the face of the planet. But she came out as atheist, basically in solidarity with atheists who have been killed in Bangladesh. Uh-huh. But she said, this is what we all learned, and she's right. I learned the exact same thing, that there is no anthropomorphic God. And yet when we use that language, people in the church think we're talking about that. And so she wanted to say, honestly, what it is. Well, yes, God is a human creation, like a religion is a human creation and all of that kind of things.
That we make our own values.
Yeah,
you're saying
yeah.
In life, we have to make decisions about how we want to live. We don't look to some kind of predetermined
supernatural
deity, sort
yeah.
of force that we have to look to. I mean, of course, it's a little frightening, and it's easier to say, well, this is sort of natural and the way that humans should live, and it's given to us somehow out of some kind of essential thing. You're saying we make our lives, and we have to make decisions about our lives, and we have to live together according to them, which is a more challenging.
It's a more challenging thing, and then it's up to you to find out what is valuable and good, and be able to share that publicly and be critiqued about it too.
I wish we had then time to talk about that, though, within a church, and what do people who want to live by those values, how do you make them real and, quote, institutionalize, that sociological word? How do you build practices that, in fact, give people the capacity and power to live that way? But we're not going to be able to talk about that now, but maybe another time.
Oh, I'd love to come back and talk about it, sure.
Yeah, I mean, how do we live that way in a world where the rewards come and security comes from acting very, very differently? You've got to accumulate a fortune to be able to be secure in this country now. And a lot of people spend a lot of time. It's not just love of money. It's the deep desire not to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I mean, for most people, they're very afraid of being vulnerable. They don't want that to be rich. And then possessions sort of are a sign of that security. It's a very complex process, the way in which capitalism, I say, sort of demoralizes people. That's for another time. Anyway, let's talk about all of those things again. Thank you very much, John Chuck, who's a KBOO on the board and does interviews here and broadcasts them all over the world. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.